What's that noise? You got a key there?
Just key, little key.
What's
key.
The key? What's the key to?
Key to the house.
Just to your house?
The key to my heart.
How many keys do you own?
Two keys.
Just, what, one car, one house?
Oh, you mean, no, I thought you meant just keys I carry. I've got...
No.
Okay.
Not including like small window keys and stuff. No window keys allowed.
Four keys.
Doors, cars, four. What are the other ones?
We've got the main key to get into the house.
Yeah.
We've got a key to get into the flat.
Right, yeah.
That's two.
Yeah.
We've got a back door key.
Okay, that counts.
That counts because that's no window, my friend.
Yeah.
It's a very big window if you count it as a window.
Well,
and it's a big key.
Is it a French window? Because that's a door.
It's a door.
Yeah.
And a car key. Although,
car key.
Copy of a car key, that's two car keys. Does
no,
that count?
That's the same key. That's
is a copy
one.
Of a key more than, you know, is that one key? Two,
well,
you know.
That's, well, no,
that's,
because...
That's a Christopher Nolan movie, my friend.
It's not, you've got because
a,
the
you've got, a, you've got a guy, you've got a key
no.
who's copied himself, and they go, are you me? Am I you? I don't even know who I am anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a key with a copy. Was I first or were you first? And the movie's called...
Master Key.
Yeah. Yes.
One day a key comes along that opens all doors and has no possible copy until it does. It's called Locksmith and Weston.
That's how the film begins. He thinks he's the master key, and then of course his world comes tumbling down when he realizes, hang on a sec. he ain't even the only key of his sort. He wasn't
right.
even first.
No.
And the
this
first
is just
key,
moon. Hang on. This is just
wait,
moon.
The first... Shut up. Let's go. It doesn't matter that
it
we're
does
rehashing.
Matter. I thought we were making an original film about keys. You're just rehashing moon here.
No, wait a sec. The main key is going to come and track down. It's got moon vibes. Basically, any clone movie is always going to have moon vibes.
No, mate. Why does it have to be a... No. Ugh. What about this instead? How about a key? Like, let's do a quick improv. You're just normal key, and you respond to me, and I'm another type of key. Okay,
I'm the protagonist key.
Hang on, knock knock.
Hello, I've got hands. Yeah,
yeah. You're
we're
key,
like Pixar
yeah.
keys.
Yeah, we're Pixar keys. Yeah, knock knock.
Okay. Who's there?
Hey, hi, Jeremy. It's me, John.
Jeremy and John. Great. I mean, that's not going to be confusing in the script stage.
Why are you talking about us in third person, Jeremy?
Sorry,
that's just
sorry,
weird,
sorry,
man.
Sorry.
Can you let me in?
What do you want?
I just want to come and talk to you. We're friends.
Yeah, but I've just put some noodles on. What's going on? This is really out of character.
Just open the door, Jeremy. I've got to tell you something.
But can you tell me what this is about?
Not through the door, Jeremy. This is just rude.
It's not. If it's so important, you should at least give me an inkling. I'm really just suddenly quite suspicious. And
I've heard about something that's going to put our livelihoods at risk.
Okay, Jill's asleep, and I think if you come in, you might
fuck
wake
Jill,
her up.
Jill, open the door.
I mean, I'd love to fuck Jill, but my grooves have worn down, and I can't. You know, I just slip out.
Well,
I slip straight out. I can't get any purchase, Jeremy, and this is a really awkward time. I'm worn down and
listen,
we can
talk about key to key relations later, okay? If Jill was a lock, you'd have an easier time. Now open the door and let me in.
Okay.
What was that Hello. Cat? Is that a cat?
That's a cat.
Oh, that was the door.
That's the door. I'm opening the door. The door's open.
Jeremy, I've heard about a terrible invention.
Yes?
Are you drinking beer while I talk to you? This is a serious conversation, Jeremy.
I know, but I'm having a difficult time. I told you, my grooves are warning down.
Oh, for God's sake.
A warning down,
listen,
they warned.
Hyundai, the big car company, they've invented a new car that doesn't need a key.
Yeah, but, I mean, I already exist and I have a pre-existing purpose. I'm not like a key that spans locks. I slot in.
This is
already.
Our legacy we're talking about here. It's not just about us. It's about the future of all keys. First it was hotels with magic cards, and now it's Hyundai with their special magic non-key key.
Well, I'm happy. I don't mind if there's changes afoot, and I welcome this new generation of, you know, those little beepers. I've met them. They're people too.
No,
you know, they're nice.
Listen,
I like them.
Remember Derek, the wooden coat hanger? Think what's become of him.
Yeah, he's like pristine. Everyone looks up to him.
No, he's in a tip somewhere, and now it's just Duncan, the plastic coat hanger.
Duncan the plastic coat.
Yeah, why Duncan are we the plastic coat hanger with the metal tip.
But why are we friends with coat hangers?
Well, because they're sort of similar to keys.
Are
and
they?
We stick with our own.
I don't see how.
Yeah,
one is like a hangs up. One is a utility of like fashion. If anyone's going to be like keys, it's going to be
what's like a key? You tell me. That's what I'll be writing in my feature about the future of keys.
I'd stick to stuff that, like, as for the joke, for like the, you know, like a shoe and dry cleaning. Actually, do you know what? Hangers do work. Basically, anywhere, like a key cutter, they do dry cleaning, they fix shoes and they cut keys. So hangers, you know what? You're right. Hangers
what,
work
what
fine.
What joke, Jeremy? What? This isn't a joke. This is my life and your legacy. What, don't you want young Kieran to have a life? That's your son, your boy,
yeah, no,
your key boy.
I think, you know, you end it on Kieran. I mean, that's the big win. But remember, we've
why
started...
Why do you keep trying to get out of this conversation and imagining
because we've
narrating
listen,
it like you're not in it, Jeremy?
We've started at 9 p.m. and we need to crack on.
Jeremy, it's the middle of the day. I did wonder why Jill was asleep.
She's taking pills, mate. She's taking pills...
Well,
actually, do you know what? I smothered her. She's dead.
Adam is the host now. The dynamic works better when Adam is the host. Adam prefers to be the host. And Joe prefers to be the participant. It's better overall when Adam is the host and Joe is the participant. Let it never be spoken of again. The ghost. 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 The ghost.
Hello, it's Joe Devine from the Movies You Forgot podcast. I'm just here with a quick update ahead of the bulk of today's episode. Few administrative things to run you through. I'll be brief. The first is that I'm very, very excited to tell you that next week, on the 25th of December, Christmas Day, Adam and I are releasing a very special episode, which will be the account of Adam coming to my house to sleep over and watch all three Lord of the Rings films. Now, I am very excited to do that. He's less excited, but he has agreed because he's a good sport. And I can't wait for you all to hear what we both make of those, although I think you will already know. After that, there'll be a quick scheduling break where we're going to take a couple of weeks off to catch up with edits. And we'll be coming back to you with normal programming on Monday the 15th of January with the episode about the film that we pick at the end of today's episode. So keep your eyes peeled for that. On a broader note, I also just wanted to say it's been a great year for us. We've really, really enjoyed doing this, as I hope you can tell. And a big thank you to everyone who has listened so far, who's subscribed, who's left us lovely reviews and comments on Apple Podcasts, and who sent us, you know, delightful feedback, which you can do at moviesyouforgotyouforgot@gmail.com. If I had a festive request, it would be to help me with a long-term goal of mine, which is to put absolutely no effort into the discoverability of this podcast. And the way you could do that, if you were so willing... Only if you want to, by the way, and only if you like it, would be to have a think about one person, that one person in your life who needs this podcast to have a better life, yeah? Or as it, that's the kind of top of the watermark. That's what we'd love. But below that, the person in your life that likes films and you think would enjoy listening to this, or indeed even just the person in your life that is the only thing you have to talk to them about. Because word of mouth is easier for me. Anyway, I'll get out of your hair now, but thanks for listening, and back to the two faces of January.
Hello, and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me, your host, Adam Richmond, and joining me as ever is the old... I'm running out of things to describe his big old bunce.
I like leaky bucket brain.
I like leaky bucket brain too. Yeah, let's go with it. It's the old leaky bucket brain, Mr. Joe Devine.
Hello there.
There is no time for small talk. Let's kick straight into things. On today's episode, we are going to talk about the 2014 flick, The Two Faces of January, written and directed by Haseen Amini. It's a wonderfully punchy 96 mins. And here is the letterboxed blurb. A mysterious encounter, a dangerous past, a deadly secret. 1962. A con artist, his wife, and a dangerous stranger are caught up in the murder of a private detective and are forced to try and escape Athens. Now that's a nice, punchy little outline of the film. That is everything that you need to know about the film The Two Faces of January. It is, of course, based on the novel by Patricia Highsmith, who also wrote such novels as The Talented Mr. Ripley and Deep Water... Tremor of Forgery, Strangers on a Train. That will probably feed into our chat later on. Now, Joe, I'm going to try something a little bit different for this chat.
Do tell.
Now, usually I ask you a question and it's an open question.
Uh-huh.
And then you speak for about 10 minutes uninterrupted.
Mm-hmm. Just the way I like it.
So I'm going to ask you a series of closed questions.
Oh, okay.
And I want you to kind of go with it. Don't see these as open questions for you to kind of go, oh, I've got something in the locker and I'm going to use that question to...
Right,
not that you do this. You don't do this.
But sure, sure. What you're saying is you want me to do exactly what you want.
I want it now to be like I am the host because the reality is, you know, you said to me I was the host, but all the while you've been pulling the strings, you know, behind the scenes, you know.
Well,
the
you've got
master.
That song, haven't you? That song that says you're the host.
Yeah, but I think that's why you've done that.
You're happy with being the host, aren't you?
Well, no, look, as I listen back to the episodes, time and again I see you dictating the conversation, deciding when the end of a bit is, suggesting segues, and it's kind of like, I think someone's... you know, getting a little bit too big for their boots, and you have big boots.
We're talking about big boots, so what are those closed questions that you...
All right, I thought you were genuinely going to take the phrase big boots and tell a story about the time you went to try and buy some shoes.
I could do that, because actually it is very difficult for me to buy shoes.
Stop.
I have size 14 feet.
Well, did you see this at the cinema? Let's get back onto safe territory. Did you see this at the cinema, Joe?
Well, talk about films that don't feel 10 years ago. Do you know a couple of weeks ago I said Blue Ruin, that feels 10 years ago to me. When I think about Blue Ruin, a 2013 film, and The Two Faces of January, a 2014 film, that makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever. Because I remember seeing this in the cinema. I remember that feeling like much more recent, maybe sort of 5 years old rather than nine. And I remember absolutely loving it. I didn't know it was a Patricia Highsmith before I bought the ticket, but I did obviously recognise the cast, and I just really enjoyed it. I thought it was terrific. It's so short, 96 minutes long. It's over before you know it, and it feels like it has packed quite a lot in. And then I don't know why I forgot about this film. I've definitely seen it once since. I watched it with my wife a few years ago, but upon description of it, asking her if she wanted to watch it with me this time, it took to the opening credits before she said, oh, I have seen this before. So she also forgot. Is there something, maybe there's something about this film?
I know why.
Why?
I was thinking exactly the same, before I get onto why, I was thinking exactly the same thing about the 10 years ago chat, because seeing it was 2014.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, this film does feel 10 years old. It looks really good though. It's shot beautifully. It's got gorgeous production design, and I think we'll jump ahead to this bit of the chat. I thought we'd have it later. I think it's forgettable because of the ending and the final shot,
which I don't remember.
And you've just watched it, so the final, and I've got to compare it to Ripley.
Mm-hmm.
The final shot of the talented Mr. Ripley is one of the great final shots of a movie ever. It's up there. All right? I'm just saying it. I've thought it. I'm saying it.
What is it?
So the final shot of the talented Mr. Ripley is Matt Damon. He's in the ferry.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just smothered. Yeah, you go. You tell me now. I've set it up. Tell me the final shot.
He's on the ferry. He's got like his new identity or whatever, and he's fine. He's happy, isn't he? No, he's just killed someone. I can't remember.
Oh, damn it! I thought I was.
I remember the look of him. The look of him stood holding the side of the boat. I remember the look of him.
Yeah. You feel the connection.
The aesthetic I can see, and the emotion I can see, but not the plot.
So he's just smothered his lover, played by Jack Davenport. It's perfect because you feel like he's escaped and he can finally be Tom Ripley again, and he's Tom Ripley with the Jack Davenport character.
Yeah,
and then someone on the ferry spots him as
Dickie.
Yeah,
what are you doing here?
And he can't have those two worlds collide. And he's got to go back to pretending.
I always thought it'd be better to be a fake somebody than a real nobody.
And the only way he can solve the problem is by smothering this person who he could just be himself with. And then it's just him sat on the bed, but the camera's behind him, and then there's a mirror on the door, and there's the sway of the ferry, and you're looking at a figure, and then you're looking at a reflection. You know, you're looking at, and then there's reflections within reflections. It's the subtext of the whole movie in one shot. It's phenomenal, and it's something. It's an image. It's a beautiful, beautifully composed image, and it is also, it speaks to everything that the film has just been about. I'm never forgetting that.
So what happens at the end of this one then?
Well, what happens? The final shot of the Two Faces of January, it's effectively an establishing shot. It's a wide establishing shot of Istanbul. A slow crane. The crane does just the little rise, the illusion of movement, and we got a fade to black. We got beautiful score playing, but it's nothing.
Yeah,
the best Highsmith novels and stories kind of, they don't end up with someone going to prison or dying. They end with someone suffering an existential woe of like something they will have to carry with them for the rest of their life. They get what they want, but not what they need.
Bonjour. Nice sweater.
It is wonderfully written. It's a really great script. And Hussein Amini, who wrote it and directed it, this is the only film he's got to direct, I think, probably because this film didn't do boffo box office, which is a shame. But yeah, before that, he'd been writing screenplays for at least 20 years, I think.
Mm.
You know, he's got some serious quality.
Yeah.
On his thing, you know, he wrote Drive for Renf.
Reffen. I won't abide it.
No, it's fair enough. I watched an interview with Amini, and he pronounced Reffen's name properly.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I do know how to say it now.
Mm-hmm.
Wings of a Dove. So, yeah, he's fantastic. He's a great writer. And there is so much of that, so much of the yeah, there's great bones in this film.
Yeah.
There's just nothing taking it over 6.5 / 7 out of 10.
I think it pips that for me. This is a 7.5 out of 10 for me.
It pips it, does it?
Yeah, because I like the second half, like the ending, the whole third act is less exciting than for me than the first. I love seeing Mortensen and Isaacs kind of get the measure of each other. I think that's really fun in the first half. It's kind of confusing. It's very layered. It's always ambiguous and unclear as to whether Oscar Isaacs is sort of looking for the, seeking the affections of Kirsten Dunst, or whether he actually wants to help, or whether it's because he has an emotional attachment to Viggo Mortensen, who he tells a friend in the first scene that he reminds him of his father who's just died a month before. So there's that whole sub-layer to it, which of course returns at the end of the film when they have a sort of, you know, these two characters have a special moment of reconciliation. And as Viggo Mortensen is dying, he, you know, the last thing he says to Oscar Isaacs is, "I'm sorry to have disappointed you," which is exactly what he says earlier in the film during a monologue about how people always grow disappointed with their parents. So, like, that whole texture there is just brilliant. I think Kirsten Dunst is amazing in the film. She's like, she plays it absolutely perfectly. It's always really, again, like, she's sort of fun and happy and uplifted most of the time. But it's always really unclear what she's thinking. And it's like the film wants you to try to get into her head a little bit, but never really allows you to do that. So it definitely gets 7.5 for me. I know we don't really do ratings on this podcast, but just as a means of expressing how I feel about it, I think it fails a little bit in the second half in the final act, but it's only 96 minutes, so I don't care.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. You know, I'm just trying to tease out your thoughts.
I just love Viggo Mortensen.
It's a shame, you know, that he kind of got pulled into playing such a boring character in the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
I won't allow you to
listen.
Draw
you've got
me
to
like
let that. I'm not. You just have to let it pass because everyone knows
what you.
Everyone
you shall not everyone, pass.
Everyone listening knows what I'm doing, and everyone knows that, you know, you're the bigger man, and that you'll just like ignore that.
Look at you. You're on one today, aren't you? You've come in here all hot. I'm the host. You're taking my bit about how everyone in the audience and me are friends and we're against you, and you're using it against me, are you? You shall not pass, my friend. You shall not. Don't you dare speak negatively about Aragorn ever again.
He's such a fantastic actor, and I'd much like the fact that he plays. He's got art in him. He's an artist.
Yeah.
He'll play a character who is old and is kind of second banana to this young buck, and he'll play someone who's can be kind of cuckolded, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's quite, you know, it's just great. It's quite rare. I was flicking through his filmography, and, you know, have you seen Carlito's Way?
No.
Oh man. If you want to see one of Viggo's finest performances, you've got to watch Carlito's Way.
The thing is, I've already seen the top three of Viggo's best performances, and they were in Lord of the Rings 1, 2, and 3.
What about Crimson Tide?
No, I haven't seen that.
He's great in that, in a little side role.
Here's a question. How many films of someone's do you have to have seen for it to be okay to say you love them? Genuine question, not related to Viggo, but if I love him because of Lord of the Rings, and I really like him in this film and other things I have seen him in, but I haven't seen these other big ones of his big performances. So when it's not like attached to a big Lord of the Rings style franchise, how many films do you have to have seen an actor in before you can fairly say, I love them?
What a superb question.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we all know who the host is.
Right. Because this happens with musicians as well, right? You listen to one album, you go, I love that band. And then someone says, oh, did you like this one? You go, I didn't know about that one. And then another one, I didn't know. And then you start to feel like you're a fraud for saying that you love someone.
Yeah, you are.
Right.
You know, you could say, I love that album.
Yeah.
Or I love Lord of the Rings. Or I love Viggo in Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. At the minute, I think that's all you can say.
Right, right.
I love Viggo.
I liked him in Captain Fantastic. I've seen him in that. Let me just look at what else he's been in so that I can tell you what I've seen him in, because I've definitely seen him in more things.
He is fantastic in Captain Fantastic.
Oh, I've seen him in The Road.
I mean, he's not enjoyable in that, though. He's not flashy.
Well, no, but I mean, he just does a great job. I've seen him in Appaloosa. I really like that film. We could have done that on this podcast, to be honest.
I'd love to just have seen that. Because, I haven't seen it.
Oh, Hidalgo. I enjoyed Hidalgo.
Mm. You know what? You've seen enough.
That's enough, isn't it? Yeah.
To prove to me and the audience that you really love him.
Yeah.
Is to then, I think, proof of the pudding is to go out and seek out their lesser known work.
Right.
Or their smaller performances.
Well, then I don't love anyone.
Right, you. So you're saying to me, I love this. Yeah, go on, show me then. Show me. Okay. So you're not going to get called out by me, but I question. You sound like a dilettante.
You've just called me out about five times.
Yeah, when I said I wasn't going to call you out.
Yeah, that's very gaslighty.
Yeah, I mean, that's just my vibe, man. That's what I'll do. I will say...
Needle, Adam Needle.
Oh, man. Yeah, you know...
Who do you love?
Who do I love?
Yeah, but like who do you think you want to say I love about, but actually you would feel underconfident that you had knew enough about them, you know?
What, me be underconfident about something?
Yeah. Just imagine that for 1 second.
I would say I love Jack Lemmon.
Jack Lemmon?
Jesus Christ. This...
Oh, Jack Lemmon. Yeah. Jack Lemmon. Some Like It Hot.
Yeah, but, okay. Yeah, but I'm basing it on
Glengarry Glen Ross.
Exactly. I have seen him in Some Like It Hot and The Apartment and a few others, but I don't think I've seen enough. Oh, right. And The Odd Couple.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say that out loud.
But that's an era thing too, isn't it? Because like with actors or performers or artists who've done something over a long period of time. Bob Dylan, for example, you know, we talk about Neil Young. It feels like it's okay to say that you love Bob Dylan, despite the fact that nobody has listened to Bob Dylan's last 13 albums. You know, like it's just not a thing. It's okay to have listened to those 5 really, really good ones and then go, yeah, I love Bob Dylan, but to have completely ignored 75, 80% of his catalogue.
Who do I love? Who can we genuinely say that we've seen most of their work and we still love them? Because I think, like, so many people have kind of disappointed in stuff. Like, I think Matt Damon's great sometimes, and I also think he's a bit, like, he's in some shit and it's a bit nothing. Ben Affleck, I love him sometimes, and then other times I think he doesn't quite do it. I've gone for two actors. I've just gone for the Good Will Hunting double there. I know the
official answer to this, if that's helpful for you.
What's the official answer?
The official answer to this is John Cazale or John Cazale.
Look, you're not a film snob. You don't.
No, I don't. I'm just saying that's the trivia answer, isn't it? Because they always say, well, this guy, he made only whatever, like a few films, but they were all the best films ever.
But they're not, though.
What? The Godfather, The Godfather 2, Dog Day Afternoon, and The Deer Hunter.
Right.
That's quite good, isn't it?
No, but you see, two of those are actually quite hard work.
Which ones?
Dog Day Afternoon and The Deer Hunter.
Right.
You're not ever popping those on.
No, I mean, you're not popping any of them. I mean, you're not popping The Godfather on either, are you? Because
they're all... Yeah, and Godfather Part 2. He's great in all of them, but you're not... That's just 5 great performances. No one's saying... And if anyone's saying they love him... You know the person was just a fucking film snob.
It's a cheat answer though, isn't it? And also there's nothing that snobby about The Deer Hunter or The Godfather. I mean, these are kind of...
No, there's something snobby about The Deer Hunter and Dog Day Afternoon, I think.
There's not anything snobby about The Deer Hunter.
No, but if you're saying John Cazale because he was in these... Deer Hunter is on that like AFI list. It's not a film people are watching these days.
What's AFI?
Oh, the American Film Institute. You know, it's the same, like, the Sight and Sound would do the list of the greatest films ever made.
Right.
When I was learning about movies as a teenager, you know, from my film magazines, they'd always, every year, you know, they'd do the list. And those films, Deer Hunter, Apocalypse Now, Dog Day Afternoon, Deliverance... Those films are always in those lists, and it's just like, that's it. They're canon. They're fantastic, and they're as good as they are, as well as they are made. They're just like long and boring and not watchable.
When was the last time you heard from your father?
Daddy?
Both of us, we both need one answer. Like, say, for example, why wouldn't you say Leonardo DiCaprio?
Because I don't like most of his films.
Okay, why wouldn't one say, I love a lot of his films, and yet I don't think I would ever say in conversation, oh, bloody hell, I love Leonardo DiCaprio. And I think for similar reasons to you.
No, I like to say that I love people. I mean, I might say it about someone like Joaquin Phoenix, maybe, or like, you know, I liked a lot of Heath Ledger's films.
Let's say they can't be dead.
They can't be dead. Okay. Well, good Lord.
Why Joaquin Phoenix, I think, now doing stuff like Joker really turned me off him.
I didn't really enjoy Joker, no, but
but it turned me off his whole kind of vibe. It was so self-serious and self-important. What about Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yeah, I mean, I like a lot of Jake Gyllenhaal's films, but I don't feel like I love Jake Gyllenhaal. Whereas
you
like
Hugh Jackman.
Feel like I love Hugh Jackman, Viggo Mortensen. I feel like I love those guys. I think there's something about like the larger sort of more kind of father looking man that I love. You know, there's something about the kind of bear that I like.
Father looking man.
The father looking man. You know, like Viggo Mortensen in this film, he just seems like I don't know why. Like the character's quite unlikable actually after the first 15 minutes. Very unlikable. Kills two people and is drunk all the time and really angry and annoying and sweaty and, you know, self-involved and deluded, and but I just like him, you know, because something about the way that he looks.
Yeah, he's great. He plays a man who is both he's self-interested, but he also loves his wife, and then he can see so much his face. He's so expressive. He's a great actor. That you love him.
I like Daniel Radcliffe.
Daniel Day-Lewis?
No, I don't love Daniel Day-Lewis. I think he's a terrific actor, but I'm rooting for Daniel Radcliffe, you know?
Let's bat some names back and forward. Just say yes and no, okay?
Okay.
But with a few little... Brad Pitt.
What am I saying now? Do I love him? What am I yesing to?
We're talking about love or not. You'll know if you love them.
Okay,
this is an emotion.
No.
You don't, do you?
No.
Gosling.
No.
Meryl Streep.
No.
Emma Stone.
No.
Kirsten Dunst?
No.
This is a great game. Jack Nicholson?
No. All the different types of no.
Acting, actors.
I've got a big list of actors in front of me.
Russell Crowe.
Oh. I think I love Russell Crowe.
I think you love Russell
I know
Crowe.
I shouldn't love Russell Crowe,
no,
but I
no,
think
this
I
is,
love Russell Crowe.
This is what we're
but
getting to.
But he reminds
to.
Me of my Uncle Damien. And I think, do I love him because I love Uncle Damien? Or what is this? Is it because I like Gladiator? And I like that Robin Hood film that they'd never finished making? You know, I don't... I think I do love Russell Crowe.
You like Daddy. You like
oh,
Daddy,
God,
guys.
God, I like Russell Crowe. I like you Daddy.
You love, mate,
shit.
Say love.
Say more, say more. Like, try and get me, say some young ones and then say an older one and then we'll see what happens. I'll be honest.
I now can only think of old people. Harrison Ford.
Oh, yeah, 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 Daddy.
Really?
Daddy.
Harvey Keitel.
No, he's too weird.
Michael Caine.
Yep, Daddy.
Oh, Andrew Garfield.
No.
Tobey Maguire.
No.
I have genuinely forgotten any actress. Oh, Charlize Theron.
I really like her, but no, I don't love her.
Margot Robbie?
No. You're going to get me with those older women, man.
Oh, Helen Mirren?
No, that's the wrong one. She never really got old.
Maggie Smith?
Yep. Daddy. That's my daddy.
Bob Hoskins?
No. Too American.
No, also, don't say it like I've lost, all right?
Did I Jeff make you Bridges. Feel so bad with my no? No, Jeff Bridges, no. Jeff Bridges is too good at playing like evil people.
You keep doing it like I'm just glad I'm getting a name out.
Right,
you're going,
right, right. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Look, you tried Googling best actors? Because it gives you loads just on Google.
That was all from my mind.
Yeah, I'm so impressed. I honestly couldn't think of one. I had to Google actors, best actors.
Denzel Washington?
Nearly, but no.
De Niro?
No.
Pacino?
No.
Hanks?
No.
Sam Jackson?
Yeah, maybe. He might be my daddy.
Morgan Freeman?
No.
Christian Bale?
Definitely not.
Anthony Hopkins?
No, he's too creepy. I mean, the characters he plays creepy too well, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. He's not warm daddy.
No, he's not warm daddy. He's creepy daddy. Ralph Fiennes, definitely, yes, he's my daddy.
Will Smith?
No.
Clint Eastwood?
No.
You hate him.
Although he does get films made under budget and before time.
Jennifer Lawrence?
No.
Natalie Portman?
No.
Cate Blanchett?
I think I love Cate Blanchett. Yeah, I think she could be my dad.
Scarlett Johansson?
No.
Oh, I mean, the next one I say I love, Kate Winslet. She's dad.
She might be dad, actually. And I think there's just something like brilliant about her. Not necessarily even just the characters, but every time I've seen her as her, she just seems really great.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
So many dads.
Julianne Moore.
Yeah.
That's a big fat yes.
That's one of the biggest yeses.
Penelope Cruz.
Yeah. She might be my daddy. Yep. Oh, Javier Bardem could be my daddy for sure. He's right dead center canon daddy.
Dead center canon daddy.
He's canon daddy right there. That's canon daddy. If you mixed him with Ralph Fiennes, whatever came out of that would be canon daddy for me.
Should we play the box office game?
Let's play the box office game, yeah, for sure. Now, Two Faces of January, box office budget, what do you reckon? It's a tough one, this.
This is a toughie. They obviously made it on a budget. And when I say that, I mean, you know, not for that much money.
A lot of locations, Adam.
It's a lot of locations.
There's a big boat.
And it's also a studio picture. And the studios, you know, they do spend money.
They do spend money, the studios.
You know, you might, if this was kind of bootstrap indie, they'd be cutting corners and they'd be making it on a budget.
Sure.
So this is studio budget.
First time director, though.
Yeah, but he's got Credola from the writer of Drive.
Yeah.
You know, starring Viggo, Isaac. This film does, you know, the package, man, the package.
Yeah.
Knowing from the interviews, it took about 20 years for Hossein to get this film made, and no one wanted to get it made. Did they make it for 20 million?
That is not an overshot. They made it for $31 million, brackets estimated.
Bracket estimated.
Yeah. So there or thereabouts.
Yeah, that's still, they don't make that kind of mid-tier, that's a mid-tier Hollywood flick. They don't make that anymore. Then you'll never see them spending 30 million on a film like this.
Mm.
It would either, they'd turn it into a streaming TV series.
Yeah.
Spend a lot less. Just wouldn't exist.
Yeah.
Forget
about
it. Or
indeed spend a lot more.
Well, you'd get, if you're spending more, it's because it's directed by someone like Martin Scorsese and it stars your DiCaprios, your Damons, etc. And then no expense spared. And then at that point, the how much they spent becomes part of the story for when they sell it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
I know what you're saying. Well, on that note, opening weekend US and Canada, let me tell you, this is September 28 release, 2014.
I don't think it's made lots. It would be maybe, it's got 300,000.
Unfortunately, that is an overshoot. It took $43,000 on its opening weekend.
Oh man, that is not.
It's a flopper. It's flopperoony territory, isn't it?
That's low. When you've got Aragorn in your film, for God's sake.
Yeah, you've got Aragorn. You've got Mary Jane, and you've got that one what from Star Wars. Although I guess this was before his Star Wars, was it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was. I just think I don't want to besmirch the good name of the American Canadian audience, but I think this was aimed far above their heads. Well, the proof...
You don't want to besmirch their name, though.
No, but I'm just saying... I'm just saying, look at the facts.
Look at the facts. Hard, cold facts. Not feelings, but facts.
These are facts. This wonderfully handsome, star-filled picture comes out. It's got some thrills. It's got some wonderful acting in. They can't be bothered to turn up.
They said, call me back when he gets his sword out again. You know, because they liked him with his sword as Aragorn.
Right, okay, sword.
Strider.
Strider.
Do they call him Strider? Hey, Marty, what's the name of that one, the sexy one from the Elven movie? Hey, Strider? Strider Ma? Yeah, that's right, Marty. Now get back in your coffin, because they're vampires.
Right, because they're vampires. Yeah. And I guess also the problem, even if it starts low, and I think unfortunately it loops back to me, to my question, would you recommend this to someone? You'd only recommend it with caveats.
Yeah.
It would be very...
With expectation, I think, caveats, not caveats about the film.
Yeah, but if you're a critic and you're writing, I think the critical response was kind of tepid to, yeah, this is very handsome, but no one was beating the drum to get people to see this.
Yeah.
They're kind of saying, yeah, this is perfectly fine.
Well, that brings us, of course, to gross worldwide, Adam. 31 million budget. 43k opening weekend.
They would have spent money on... I don't think it even made back its production budget, I don't think. Because he didn't get another bite of the cherry. Did it do that badly? Maybe just in cinemas, I think maybe 15 million?
13 and a half.
Oh, man, that's so poor, unfair. Huh?
Yeah.
That's very poor.
I think it's the first one that we've come to which really isn't at all a fair reflection of the quality of the film.
Absolutely not.
And the cutthroat nature of this business, I assume, you've referred to this a couple of times already, but I assume that is the reason that Hossein Amini wasn't able to, or hasn't as of yet, directed another film.
That would be part of it. I think it's also the kind of film that he probably wants to write. I said they don't make these kinds of films anymore. They don't make them anymore because people don't go and see them anymore.
Yeah.
So it's not like the Hollywood studios are thick. It's that we get what we deserve.
Well, I guess they just need to make them for less money.
But it's making a film that looks like that. That's how much it costs. They're not like spunking up the wall, having parties.
No.
It's an expensive enterprise.
Yeah.
Costumes.
Hats. There's a lot of hats in this film.
Hat budget.
I
tell you what, I fucking love the way that Viggo and Oscar hang a cigarette on their lip. The way Viggo in particular, the way he has a cigarette hang at the side of his mouth is, I mean, that's why you want to smoke. You just want to be able to have that look. It's phenomenal.
Well, anyway, I watched a really interesting interview with Hossein Amini, the director, the writer, and I sent this to you. I know that you've watched this as well. There were a couple of things that I wanted to pull out of this, and one of them relates to box office, which is why we played the box office game a bit earlier in this episode than usual. Because there's a moment in this interview where he talks about how, he says, obviously nobody wants to lose money on a project like this. But he had worked with Nicholas Winding Refn before, as previously mentioned. Refn, he's the writer of Drive, and Refn was the director. And he said that Drive was an example of a film that really wasn't always popular with its financiers as it was being made. But he really admired Nicholas Winding Refn, as opposed to some other directors that he'd worked with, because he really stuck to his guns. Whereas he said he'd seen other directors kind of wilt to the demands of the studio and of test screenings and stuff. And I think this interview is recorded, I assume, I'm not certain, but maybe before the fullest extent of the flopperoonie that we've just discussed. But it's quite an interesting moment for me to look at the gross worldwide of this film and then watch that interview and think, well, he's outright saying he admires the directors that, you know, stick to their guns, and I assume that's the approach that he's taken here. And I just wonder what impact that has on someone if they then, you know, don't get the opportunity to make another film. Maybe we're reading into it too much, but, you know.
Well, the thing is, it's a cohesive piece of art. It looks like someone...
It's art, yeah.
It looks like someone has made it, and it's got a kind of a singular vision. It's kind of what I find interesting is that in that interview and a Kirsten Dunst one I watched, Kirsten and Hossein both make a reference to the fact that they didn't have the same amount of money as talented Mr. Ripley. Like, and I, that's why they were like, oh, we kind of made, it was like the budget version
yeah.
of that. Now, I just had a quick look. What do you think the budget for Talented Mr. Ripley was?
Was it less than 31 million?
No, it's obviously more. Talented Mr. Ripley, incidentally, comes out in one of the great years of cinema, 1999. You know, ask anyone, that's up there. The films that came out that year, it's phenomenal. Anyway,
don't ask the kids that were born in 2000, though. They don't like that at all. What do I think it cost? I think it cost $80 million.
The budget says here, estimated $40 million.
Oh, yeah, I over-egged it a lot.
How much do you think it made?
I think it made $200 million.
You've over-egged it. It made $130 million.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There or thereabouts.
Great.
Because it was a critical... Now, so, I mean, Talented Mr. Ripley's got an extra $10 million to play with.
Yeah.
I mean, is... I mean...
What does that add up to?
That's obviously... $10 million's not nothing.
Sure.
But the way that both Hasina Amini and Kirsten Dunst framed it was just like, I kind of expected it to be half the budget.
Well, it's hey, like, now, hold on, though, because we also have... If we're going to have this conversation, we got to talk about you-know-what.
Oh.
Inflation.
Yeah, do you know what? I could take it back. I'll take it back.
I would say, let's a basic little inflation calculator now. Let's work this out. Inflation calculator.
You're so smart.
So we're going to say that $40
million... In 1999, how much was it worth?
In 1999, okay. Now, I'll accept the recommended cookies on this page. And what we want, in August 1999... And actually, they would have been making it in 1998. It's roughly... Inflation averaged about 2.2% per year. So the value of the money that was spent in 1998 was about $55.5 million in 2013, which is when they would have been making this film. So it is actually, it's about half the budget.
It was half. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's really, that's not interesting.
Having
it's what
said
I
that,
thought.
In 1999, were they filming on film? Were the cost of, what's the impact of the inflation on the specifically on the movie industry? Because I bet it's become cheaper to do a lot of things in the movie making industry. So maybe the effect of inflation is completely negated and the actors and directors should have known that and thought about that before they made those comments.
Let's nip all of this convo. You've nipped in the bud with your great inflation chat.
Right, yeah. I can go on about inflation all day. You want to talk about LIBOR rates?
No, I want to get back. I took us off topic with a thick observation. This is a singular vision. It's coherent and cohesive, and it's 96 mins, and it has... it takes a lot of effort to make a movie.
Yep.
And I imagine it probably took it out of Hasina Amini. And it took him 20 years to like get it made anyway.
Yeah.
And then if he wants to make another one...
He also said he hated editing it.
If the people with the money say, what happened with your last one? You made money, right? He'll go, oh no, they gave me 30 million and the film made 13. And they go, do you know what? Let's, you know, maybe just stick to writing.
Yeah.
But yeah, he did say he hated editing it.
It's a real shame that that's the way that it works as well, because I think clearly this is his directional debut.
Directorial.
It's his directional debut as well, because before that he'd never changed direction. He just walked in one way. He was born facing Hollywood and then he just kept walking until the age of 40 and then he made this film. And that was his directorial debut as well. Mm. And it's a wonderful looking film. I think it's very well made. It's a nice, tight little movie. The problem is people. That's the problem. The problem is always people. The people are wrong. The audiences are wrong.
Hey, Joe.
Yeah?
We're kind of nearing the end of the chat. Have you got any... Is there any films that you've seen recently that you think people might be interested to hear about?
I've watched two films this week, Adam. One of them was, I put it on during the day. I was a bit poorly, you know, a bit under weather this week. So I watched a film during the day. I always like to do that. And this one was In the Loop. You know, do you remember In the Loop? That is the movie version of The Thick of It, the Armando Iannucci political satirical comedy television series.
Yeah, the TV series is great. It stands up. As I tried rewatching In the Loop, and when it came out, I thought, yeah, this is very solid. It's very funny. Mm-hmm. Comedy films, I find it's a lot harder to sustain the humour.
Yeah.
It's a real rare film. Like, it hits you and those gags are always going to get you, like Anchorman. I wouldn't say South Park anymore. I haven't watched the South Park movie in a long old time. I'd say that the comedies that I rewatched again and again and found lots of humor in would be Spinal Tap, Anchorman, and The Big Lebowski.
What about Dodgeball? I always liked Dodgeball.
Yeah, that's pretty comfort comedy.
Yeah.
And I can always chuckle at that. But sorry, I've sidetracked you.
No, that's fine. I mean, this one's not really a chuckle-a-thon, is it? And I think you're right, because the pacing of it is very similar to the pacing of the TV series. And all those episodes, I think the vast majority, apart from one special, are all 30 minutes long. There is one line in it, though, and one moment in the film that makes me laugh so much that it just wins me over to the entire project every time, which is when the main character says difficult in a meeting, and there's no point giving any context for it, doesn't matter, but it makes me laugh every time. It's really, really good. So I enjoyed that, and that's the only thing I wrote down about that.
If you were chatting to someone and they hadn't watched that but were fans of the likes of Succession, they're young, they'd not seen the thick of it,
yeah,
what would you recommend? Would you recommend them watch the thick of it?
Yes.
And or would you recommend them watch the film?
No, I'd recommend them watch the thick of it.
And then would you not even recommend the movie?
I think if they liked the thick of it, they'd find the movie on their own.
Great. So job done.
Job done. Yeah. Wash my hands of it.
Yeah.
I'd recommend The Thick of It to anyone, though. I mean, I love that show.
I went to the cinema.
Oh.
Last night. The director of Rogue One, Gareth Edwards, he's got a new flick out called The Creator, starring John David Washington.
Oh, yeah.
Who I didn't actually realise was Denzel Washington's son.
You were very excited to tell me that.
Yeah, because I was telling my wife I was going to go and see the film, and I said, it's got John David Washington in, and she looked blank. And I said, he was in Tenet. She continued to look blank. And I said, Black Klansman. And she Googled him. And she went, oh, yeah, that guy. And then she went, oh, he's Denzel. She went, oh, he's Denzel Washington's son. And I said, fuck off. What? She went, yeah, he's Denzel. Look, and I said, no, he's not. Shut up. You know, he's a man in his eyes. I said, shut up, really loudly in the restaurant. And she said, no, look. And she showed me a picture of them, you know, together.
While she was telling you to calm down.
I was like, fuck. And I was just convinced, like, he came out big in Black Klansman.
Which he's terrific in, by the way.
Not a good film, I don't think.
I like that film.
Fine. It's
not saying it's really, really good, but I enjoyed it. I think it's funny. The second watch is definitely better than the first, and it's a good performance.
He's very good in it.
Yeah.
I found it a bit confused. But anyway, I don't remember anyone... Everyone was talking about how great he was in that film. I don't remember anyone saying, oh, and of course, this is the son of Denzel Washington. Likewise, no one was mentioning it again when he was in Tenet.
Mm-hmm.
But then maybe because he's just established that everyone knew and I just didn't. It was just not a thing that anyone deemed chatworthy. It blew me away. Also, given that everyone, you know, Gen Z today, they're obsessed with Nepo babies.
Nepo?
Nepo.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's nepotism, isn't it? Yeah, I just said that. I just figured it out as well.
No problem.
No, there is a problem, mate. There's a problem.
I mean...
And they seem to love sticking it to anyone who's related to anyone famous.
Right.
I mean, and the thing is, they'd love, like, Sofia Coppola movies.
Yeah.
Sofia Coppola.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's not related to anyone famous, is she?
The people who make those delicious apple drinks. The apple drink company, Coppola.
She's got so much of that Coppola money. The apple juice money runs right through.
That, I mean, they make delicious beverages. I can't, I'm happy she's making art.
That original, the scene when Bill Murray is doing the Suntory advert in that film, it was originally a Coppola advert. And the execs had to kind of take her to one side and said, look, we know you're proud of your father's cloudy apple juice, but we can't be having this. what are we talking about?
I don't know.
For relaxing times, Make it Suntory time.
Cut! This is the bit of the podcast where we take it in turns to read out a list of films to try and catch out the other on a movie they forgot. They forgot they'd even watched in the first place. Today, it's Joe reading out a list against me, and he's probably got a hell of a long list because I am a tricky little beast.
Yep, there's seven films here. Yep, but.
You've got me golden duck.
Now listen, this is a kind of tricky list, okay? Because there's one or two films on here that are just organic general choices that I think you probably have forgotten about, and I could get you on. And I'm going to start with those because the others are films that have come up on this podcast before, and you've said you could get me with that.
Good.
So I know I'm on safe ground because I'm going to get you with one of these minimum. Okay.
Good. Good.
But I'm going to start with this. Trainspotting 2.
It's a good.
Actually, I was doing the. I got confused by the Decemberists.
Oh, yeah, you did.
I fell on the playing field. I always get this exactly the same opening drum line, isn't it?
Amazing. It's so musical. I don't even consider that to be a movie. So I've got to reject it out of hand.
Okay. Well, it was. I mean, we've done a lot of Danny Boyle before. So, you know, that's fine.
Also, you don't blow your Danny Boyle beans on Trainspotting 2. We both know what Danny Boyle you're going to blow your beans on.
Well, I'm going to wait. I'm not going to say that one yet. Because I've got one more that I think I could get you with for sure. I could genuinely get you with this.
So I want to hear everything else until that one.
I'll keep that one last then, okay?
Yeah.
I Heart Huckabees. That's a good one, right? It maybe hasn't got you, but it is a good one.
It's a good one.
Okay, I'll add that to the next time I do the list of films where you've said maybe in the future. Well, in which case, there's only one Boyle left for you, and that's the Boyle that you need to lance on the front of your eyes, The Beach.
I can't remember. There's only one thing I can remember about that movie.
What is it?
I guess.
Is it Leonardo DiCaprio?
Well, obviously I know
he's
in...
Has sex.
Oh, does he?
With...
Hang on.
Tilda Swinton.
No, I completely forgot that bit.
Oh.
I remember the really horrible computer game sequence.
Oh, right, yeah, that bit.
Because it's so shit.
Right, yeah. this is going to be fun.
So, that was the Two Faces of January episode... All done and dusted. That's all she wrote. See you next time. Say goodbye, Joe.
Goodbye, Joe.
Do boop ba doo boop boop ba doo boop.